You know, the reason I sent the telegram to Washington was I really thought that Raymond Marcus could be killed, you know, in that evening or in the near future, and Hugo Penelope killed, and the guards won't kill him. They won't beat him. They said they would, but they'll get a man and offer him parole, and they'll say there was a fight between the blacks and whites. And I want on the record that if either of these men are killed, that the whole California justice system is responsible for their murders, and specifically the judicial system, Raymond Pecunier and Evel Younger, must stand. They have no public immunity like Mr. Kissinger hides behind or people in the White House. They have to stand for what is happening in these cases, and I want it public now that if any guard or anyone at Soledad kills these men or damages them first anymore, I want the record straight who's doing it. I'm going now to just go to some notes I took directly from the trial, from the words of Hugo Pinnell. I think you'll understand what's happening. First, I'm going to read that letter Robert Kastenmeier wrote from the subcommittee, number 3. That's the gentleman I sent the wire to.
Kastenmeier is what? Is he a staff member?
No, he's a member of the House of Representatives.
Okay.
He's on the Committee of the Judiciary in Washington, D.C., and he wrote a letter to the House from the House of Representatives to Mr. Pecunier. Pecunier is the head of the Department of Corrections for the state of California. It's dated October the 29th, 1971. Mr. Pecunier, I want to express appreciation of the subcommittee on assistance at the Soledad and San Quentin. One issue which arose subsequent to your testimony and after you left concerned Hugo Pinnell. Mr. Caldwell, and that's Pinnell's lawyer, brought up the issue of assault upon Pinnell. Those were not accidents, and Mr. Pinnell's life is in danger. I want you to review these serious questions. We will be watching with concern the treatment of Pinnell, and it was signed Robert Kastenmeier. This is from Washington, D.C. Now, involving Mr. Pecunier, I'm going to read you what Hugo Pinnell said on the stand yesterday. He said that after the shootout at San Quentin, you see, Hugo Pinnell was at Soledad prison down here in Monterey, California, and he's had serious migraine headaches since he was very young. He fell out the fourth story of a building, and he's had very serious headaches that occur. And he wanted an encephalogram and test because he was accused of killing a guard at down at Soledad. He claimed he was innocent, and he screams at night. He has terrible headaches, and he needed physical treatment for his head, which was aggravated by continuously being beat on the head by these guards. The condition existed before, and he is innocent of killing that guard, but he has his physical condition, and they keep brutalizing him, and it doesn't help the original condition. So his attorney got permission for him to go to the UC Medical Center for a private examination, and they would pay for it. His attorney, Ed Caldwell, would pay for this. The prison system wouldn't pay for it. And in order to house him up north, he was placed in San Quentin, and he was to go over to UC Medical Center, and the instructions were, don't hit him on the head and don't touch him. He's under neurological examination at his own expense. And at the time he was at San Quentin, just as a coincidence, was when the shootout came with George Jackson. George Jackson was killed, and Pinnell's on trial. He goes up every Friday to San Francisco, and he's accused of being in on that.
Yeah, he's one of the San Quentin Six.
He's one of the San Quentin Six, and this goes along with their intention just to frame him. He just happened to be there. He wasn't part of a conspiracy at all. He was there for medical examinations, and he was at the prison at the time.
Did he ever get those medical examinations?
Well, let me tell you what happened about this medical examination. He was so badly clubbed, and I don't think he ever got complete examinations. He couldn't. But this is how he describes it. These are his words I took from the trial this week at Salinas. He was clubbed on the head. And after the shootout, they took all the men in the prison, you know, and wanted to question them, interrogate them what was happening. He was clubbed on the head, even though he had just been at the prison for the purpose of examinations. He was completely naked. The men were completely naked, and their hands were chained behind their backs, and the handcuffs were so tight, he said, the circulation was cut off. Their ankles were shackled, and their hands were behind their back, and they were naked, and they were thrown outside in the yard for about 4 hours where he was beaten up continuously and clubbed. And then he was taken back to a place called the Fort Post to be asked about the incident of the shootout that took place that August. They busted my head. They chained me on the grass for no reason at all. And the lieutenant in charge of questioning said, well, let's take that dog back on the grass because they wanted me to waive certain rights. They took me in for questioning. He said I wouldn't raise them. So they said, let's take that dog back on the grass, and they dumped me there. Then Raymond Pecunier, at the head of the Department of Corrections, was in a room where they called him back in, and they said, now it's your turn. He was about the 9th or 10th to be interrogated, and they brought him into a room. Pecunier was there observing. The Attorney General, Evel Youngler, was there observing. Ray Parks of San Quentin, the warden at San Quentin, was there observing, and he said, other people I don't know, and they were watching the questioning of Pinnell. Now, this is the same Pecunier that the House of Representatives is asking what happened. They had a gun pointed at my head, and they said that if I groaned any time, my head would be blown off just in the same manner as George Jackson's. They buried my head when I was outside in the grass, and I could hardly breathe. They told me not to remove any part of my body, and I remained still. And then back at the Adjustment Center, when they brought me in, bring Pinnell in, there was Mr. Jacobs, the associate superintendent, who was in civilian clothes, Pecunier, Parks. The officers grabbed me into the Adjustment Center. They immediately hit me, and they stabbed me in my leg. And I still have the scar. He showed he had socks on and chains yesterday, his left leg. He has a scar where they stabbed him in his leg in the presence of Younger, Pecunier, and Parks. And they kicked me, and they punched me in the face. And they then finally put me on a chair, and they grabbed my hair, and they jerked my head back, and they said, we're going to give you a haircut. And Jacobs said, he's the Adjustment Center, works out there, said, why don't we just kill him now? And Parks spat at my face. He's chained, his hands and feet, shaving his hair in all different zigzag directions, probably because the hair was a symbol of the black unity, you know, and it wasn't that long, but they were going to chop it off. He said, like a patchwork thing into little pieces up and down and lanes, you know, to make it all look silly. And Jacob said, why don't we kill him now? And Parks said, no, this is just the beginning of him. We're going to leave him as an example for all those revolutionaries and political inmates and those who don't believe in our system. And he'll become the tool and the object. He's more beneficial if he's alive so that we can break his spirit to show the others. And Parks said, well, I could kill you right now, but I won't. Pinnell said, go ahead and kill me. And Parks said, I won't kill you now. The inmates at the Adjustment Center will just have to see how we can use a person as an example and break their spirit.
Okay, those are all charges that Pinnell makes, but he's got no way to back him up. Nobody else is going to admit
he can't
if that were true. No one else is going to say that. That's his word against theirs.
He has asked the defense attorney to call Pecunier. I have a list of people. He has asked, here's a list of the people that he's asked to come to this trial to say under oath whether this happened or not. He wants Congress.
Do you think under oath it would make any difference?
Well, I think they should.
Just because they're under oath that they would admit something like that if it were true?
Well, I think there were other witnesses and guards in the room, and these men, through perjury, see, if you want to get a man out of Congress or a hardened man, say, in the gang wars and so forth, you've gone through tax or perjury. You never got him on the crime. And you could call Pecunier or Younger. You could call in Parks and ask them if this happened, if this is the way they interrogate. And if they say no and other witnesses say yes, or if you have recordings or minutes of these men should be removed from office. You know, he asked to have Congressman Dellums. He had written him a letter about this. He asked Bobby Soto as a witness, an eyewitness of the alleged killing of McCarthy, who was in cell 134, wouldn't come. He wanted Dr. Frank Rendell, his psychiatrist. He wanted inmate Bateras from cell 136, an eyewitness. He asked for James Park, the warden of San Quentin. He asked for Mr. Fitzharris from Sacramento. He asked for the head administrator of South Facility. He asked for Mr. Bailey to give the dental plates and x-rays to prove about how his teeth were handled. Officer Tucker and Owing, I have a list of 30 people, but the public defender won't call them. See, so you could say, well, this is hearsay. If he were defending him, see, the district attorney's office that's prosecuting is defending. And Mr. Tucker won't invite these people in. So the judge can say, now you take it. He let him talk for 5 hours and 2 days. And he says to the jury, now you realize that this is all hearsay, you know, as testimony. And so Pinnell says, but I want it documented. Like you say, I want these witnesses here to get in the record, whether it is or not. And the public defender refuses to call him. And there's no, a man can't call anybody to his own defense. And the lawyer that he wants for the case, Ed Caldwell, was removed from the case. He couldn't have him. When the DA's office in Salinas found out that Caldwell was going to take the case, he wouldn't let him take it, the lawyer that he wanted, just like James Ray couldn't have Haynes as his lawyer, or Ruby couldn't have Howard.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm bringing up. That's the only reason I bring up the fact that this is Pinnell's word against other people's word. Do you think that the only hope that Pinnell has is to try to get numerous witnesses who might have seen these things happening to not collaborate each other's stories?
Oh, we'll say that again.
Well, in other words, so that there'd be inconsistencies among all these people.
I don't think there'd be any inconsistencies in any of the witnesses that he would call in. They are dying and willing to hold to their story. They are in holes now in those strip cells that you were talking about. They are holding to the truth, and they won't be badgered because their life is on the line, and they can't be bought or sold, and they're holding to the truth. And I know it's the truth because they're holding on at such a heavy price with the whippings and isolations that they're taking.
Strip cells, which Soledad denies exist.
Well, they're in there right now.
Yeah. But I followed that up as a news story when Pinnell passed a note to his mother several days ago during the trial saying that some of the witnesses that he wanted to have called were being held in strip cells, and they were on a hunger strike for so many days. And so I checked that out, and Soledad said, called back and said, no, there was no such thing as strip cells. They had phased those out, and that these men, several of the men that I named as potential witnesses for Pinnell, I named as being participating in this hunger strike, he said, were moved to end housing, which I found out later that end housing is what the prisoners call strip cells.
Yeah.
And strip cells are smaller than average cells with a raised concrete platform to be used as a bed, and until very recently, not even a toilet. There
and
was just
dark.
A hole in the side.
And it's dark. Pinnell has been in one of those, and he said, well, I'm having a trial. I have to have light. I'm on court. I was in a strip cell this week with no light, no bed, no nothing. He says, I go to court every day, and I want to work with my lawyer. Get the name of the man you talked to out there and write it down.
Because George Baker.
Okay, because, see, the news coverage this week in the Monterey Herald has an article about 2 inches long that Pinnell is talking on his own behalf, and it says there's electric power blackout, which we'll go into, and then it says his monologue consumed 5 hours. I'm reading you what his monologue is. Our local paper doesn't even tell. Now, I'm going to rush on now to finish the thing, what happened in San Quentin in front of Pecunier and Evel Younger, and then tell you what happened down at Soledad, where they want him to frame George Jackson, and this was the beginning of the conspiracy against Pinnell. He was told, they said, we could kill you right now, the prison official said, Mr. Parks. And he said, go ahead and kill me. And they said, no, we won't kill you. We'll use you as an example for the other inmates to see how you break their spirits. He said, I was taken upstairs, brutalized again, dragged with chains on his shoulders and legs and told crawl, dog, and crawl to his cell. And the 1 minute that Marcus was on the stand yesterday, he was telling that if it weren't for the men on death row and some of the people, the prisoners, Pinnell wouldn't be alive now. They just let him bleeding hours and hours at a time, week after week. I mentioned last week he's the most brutalized prisoner in the California prison system. And you were kind of shocked. Remember, we talked about that. He said, when they finally put me in my cell, Procinier, Department of Corrections, was present at the time. He refused to do anything. He didn't say a word. He was part of the conspiracy. He knew I was from Monterey County, and I was only in San Quentin for medical tests to appear at the UCLA Medical Center 2 days later.
UC San Francisco.
UC Medical Center in San Francisco, yeah. He says that same night, after he was brutalized on the lawn and left to bleed and beat up and clubbed and his leg stabbed, the same night, between 8:30 and 9, Lieutenant Nelson came by with a gun to my cell. He didn't point it to me. He just held it at his side and said I would never leave San Quentin alive. He spit on my face, just like Parks did. He said we would all be killed. I spit back, and he said told me he would wait for the moment. They had special plans for me. He came again and said, we will blow your brains out. I don't have to wait for orders for your specific date or for your death. I can kill you tonight or any night or wherever you may be.
Again, it's his word against theirs, though. There's no way to back this up.
Well, if he can't.
It is hearsay.
This is Pinnell's word of what happened. He has asked the defense attorney for the public defender to call these people to back up what he's saying, and they refuse to do it. Now, how do you handle a case like that? He is willing to have these people come in. He's begging for them. He's accusing the public defender of a conspiracy to keep him down because they won't allow him to back up his statements. See, the judge keeps saying, this is hearsay or you can have an appeal. Now, I'm going into what happened in Soledad in 1970. This preceded the incident of August up at in 71 at San Quentin. In January the 17th, 1970, I was in my cell. I'm reading Hugo Pinnell's words. And I was approached by Sergeant Madden and Mr. Fritz. And I'm using those names because those men could be called in on the stand and either say true or false and get perjury or tell the truth, you see. I was approached by Sergeant Madden and Mr. Fritz. And I was asked if I knew anyone by the name of George Jackson. And they said Jackson was on the other side of the prison. Would I like permission to see him? And I said, why are you doing this? Isn't this against regulations? And they said, well, he may be going the main line again, and you like him, and you can see him. And at that time, George Jackson was down in that strip cell, 123, numbered 123. So they chained me down, they did a skin search, and they took me to the other side of the jail. And Sergeant Maddox and these other officers went with me. And I saw George lying on the floor, and I gave him greetings, and he returned them. We shook hands and smiled, and I said to him, did you have a date, meaning to get out soon? And he said, no. And after a brief talk, we parted, and I was led to the other side, and I was put in my cell for a few minutes. And an hour later, I was told to come out, and they would take me to the Sally Port, and I was going to meet a committee review. They were going to have
What's the Sally Port?
Well, that's a place outside of the cells, evidently, a railing or a meeting place that's larger than the alley where the cells are. Sally Port must be like an entrance out there where they congregate. I was taking the Sally Port, and they said, we're going to have a committee review with you. And he said, testified it wasn't a committee review. And inside, they took him to Captain Moody.
What's a committee review supposed to be?
Well, to review whether you'll be out on parole soon or whether
he due for parole?
Well, he's been in, you know, since 1965 on a rate, 3 years to life. He would be due for parole if he behaved.
He was eligible for parole.
At any time. He had served more than his 3 years. If they wanted him to get out, yes, he could have gotten out. And I'm looking for the background of Moody. We'll go into that. Okay, Captain Moody takes him in. Moody says we'll have a committee review. Captain Moody was in civilian clothes. Captain Moody now works for the Public Defender's Office and also the Justice Department of the State of California. Captain Moody said to him, the Lieutenant Maddox was in uniform, and there was another man there who was not tall. He was 5'7". He was 5'9". Dirty blonde, civilian clothes. The defense should know who the other man was. The attorney should ask Moody and Maddox, the public defender, who this man was, because in all of these political conspiracies and assassinations, I wonder if they're tied into the Central Intelligence Agency like the L.A. Police Department is in Philly. There's always this unidentified person in plain clothes who shouldn't be in the prison, who's always with him when he's brutalized, and the other man took notes. The other man was there, and he told me to sit down. And they offered me coffee, and they offered me cigarettes, and I refused both. And Moody said to me, in quotes, that he was a public defender, and at that time, he said, he was talking at that time, he said. And I didn't say anything, because I know Moody very well from the prison system. And he said he had an investigator with him. This was the plainclothes man, and Moody did the talking. And then Sergeant Maddox
Moody said, worked for the prison.
He said he was a public defender. He worked
but
for the prison
identified,
at the time.
But Pinnell says that he identified himself as a public defender.
And now that's important. That's one of the most important parts of the case that he
Why
worked.
Would some... If Moody knew that Pinnell knew him, why would he identify himself as a public defender?
Well, because Pinnell has no access to the media or outside. I'll tell you why when you read. I'm going to tell you now what he said, and then you'll see why he did it. He said Captain Moody was in civilian clothes, but he identified himself as a public defender and said he had an investigator with him. And Sergeant Maddox said, Pinnell, you just got through talking with Jackson, didn't you? And he said, yes. He said, you faced charges soon in Sacramento, right? He says, that's right. And he says, we could do it for you. We'll fix it for you. And they offered to fix the charges and get Pinnell out of prison now. It will fix it for you. He says, if you do what we tell you, we'll get you out. But if you don't, you'll never get home again. If you do, you'll get to the main line. That means they were in segregated, isolated wings. The main line is the main body of the prison system. And if you tell us that during your conversation with George Jackson, he admitted committing a crime, we'll get you to the main line. We have the juice, meaning the context. We could change all of your charges. We could change it. And Pinnell said to Maddox, you are a fool. You picked the wrong person. I will not lie about George Jackson or anybody else. And Maddox said, Pinnell, you are a fool. You could go to the main line and later get your charges dropped. Now, this is in the public record, Phil. You'll be able to purchase it. I'll get it. I'm not making this up. I said I will get the
charges. But again, it's hearsay, right?
It's also in the testimony now that he was not allowed, the public record, that he couldn't get these men into court, that the public defender wouldn't allow. And that's in the record. Pinnell kept bringing it out.
But these are Pinnell's charges.
These are Pinnell's charges, but the public defender won't allow him to show to the jury that it happened. Okay. See, he said, Maddox said, I'll get your charges dropped anyway. And I said, you know, he says, I'll get your charges dropped. And Pinnell says, well, I'll get mine anyway dropped, because he knows it was time to come out and he hadn't done anything wrong. And he said, I don't like being segregated here. I want to be at the main line. I function better among everybody. And Moody listened, and the plainclothes man took notes, and Maddox did the talking. And he said, don't you consider yourself as important as George Jackson? And Pinnell said, I consider Jackson something very special to me. He's the only man inside or outside our prison who could teach me anything. And I love the man. And there's no competition between us because we want the same objective and we have progressive ideals.
Now, I don't understand. Did Pinnell know Jackson outside of that one conversation that had been set up?
They had
that
been.
Pinnell says was set up?
Well, they had been together at various times in the prison system, and he through. I don't know how much time they had in the yard together, but there was time that he got to know Jackson. Yes, they were friends, and they shared reading time and books. He had a whole list of books that in his cell, and he knew Jackson, and he liked Jackson. But George Jackson spent 6 or 8 years in solitary confinement in a hole, and there wasn't much time. But everyone knew about George Jackson at Soledad, you know, and they loved George Jackson. And he said, he's the only person inside of the prison that could teach me anything. And I would never do what you said. And they said, well, this is a foolish move on your part because you could be going home. And by not signing a paper against George Jackson, putting your name to it, you are closing every avenue you'll ever have to go home. And Pinnell said, you already told me I would never go home. And Maddox said, but we have the juice to drop those charges. We manipulate in our own fashion, and your charges will be dropped. Now, I think Maddox should have been called as a witness in this case. Because Pinnell has claimed there was a conspiracy against him. And Maddox said, we will put you, if you obey, on the main line, and you put in a strong statement and a written statement about George Jackson, and I'll do everything in my power to set you up. And he went on to say, you were lucky enough not to be here on the 13th. That was the killing out in the yard where Nolan and the other three black fellows were killed, out in the yard. And he said, you were lucky not to be here on the 13th, because at that time he was up at San Quentin going back and forth. He said, or you would have been killed along with Nolan. And Maddox said, we'll tell you from now on you can expect death every angle possible, whether you're awake or asleep. Tell us Jackson committed a crime and you go home. And if you don't tell us, you'll be dead. And I told Maddox then I would accept his coffee. I stood up and said, I will accept your coffee. And I stood up and I threw it in his face. And I told him, you are not bargaining with any fool, Mr. Maddox. I am a defendant in my case in Sacramento, but that does not mean I am stupid. And Maddox said, that coffee is hot, Pinnell, but it's going to be hotter for you. At that moment, at 11:15, the lights went out in the court.
That's when, during Pinnell's testimony.
During Pinnell's testimony, the lights went out in court. Now, a lot of people are not as familiar with the technique that this system uses. I have studied in the past 9 years. The lights went out. When they went out, I said to the people around me, this case will end now. This is the end of the trial of Hugo Pinnell. Because what happens is this. Louis Tackwood, the agent provocateur that we mentioned in L.A., said, when he surfaced and said he was a provocateur for 10 years, the LA Police Department said that he was wired with a listening device in his home or when he was up at the Berkeley City Council or on the streets, that when he talked to a person, that conversation went directly to the police department in LA, and they could hear the conversations. He didn't have to get to a phone and tell them what happened. What he said was a radio that went right to the police department. And what is said in that courtroom was going to Sacramento. I know it went outside the call and went to Sacramento because this involves the position, the prestige, the power of Ebel Younger, Pecunier, and Parks. And the judge up to this point for 2 days had allowed Pinnell. He had no public defender. So the judge did say to him, tell us in your own words why you think there was a conspiracy against you. And I wrote as fast as I could, as I say, 50 pages. I was writing like mad what he was saying. And the judge was the most lenient in that particular moment to let Pinnell, because a public defender wouldn't allow someone to come in. But at the same time, the judge kept saying to the jury, remember, this is hearsay, remember, it's hearsay, or I want it on the record that if he has an appeal, I've been fair. Well, what he's doing by allowing appeal and not forcing the public defender to be fired like Pinnell wants is that he's sending the boy back to jail where he'll be killed. Or the man who came in, Marquez, could be killed, you know, just while we're talking, this week or the next month or half a year. So the judge wants the record that he's fair, but he won't let it be on the record to be proven by any of the witnesses coming in, and the electorate goes out. We take a break till 1:30, and the judge says, okay, Pinnell, go back and talk, and I want you to know all the time he's in terrible pain and beaten up and so forth. He comes back to talk, and just when he is going some more into his conspiracy thing, the prosecution changes the subject, like with the Warren Commission hearings, changes the subject. Pinnell has an envelope more to prove of conspiracy against him. These are just two instances I talked about. There's 20 more we could do. He can't finish. The prosecution changes the subject. They bring in other witnesses. The public defender won't get back to Pinnell. They send the jury out of the room. Everything to prove his defense is thrown out, and the court, it'll be interesting to see how this winds up if he ever does get an extension of this for the next week and a new defender. He has no defender during this week. The public defender walked out and the jury didn't know he was there. In summary, the case of Hugo Pinnell must be told across this nation. In Washington, it falls on the California penal system. They're incremental. This man has been threatened with death so many times. He's putting his life on the line to tell you what's happening in this state. And I want you all to write letters to Washington. If you can't do anything else, everyone who heard this show, write to Washington and say, please investigate the entire trial of Hugo Pinnell. We do not want another trial. This trial should continue now, right now, and prove his innocence.
Dialogue Assassination with political research specialist Mae Brussel. I'm Phil...